Hey, What Works listeners. Over the next few weeks, I've got something a wee bit different for you. The quick backstory is that Sean and I have been kicking around ideas for media projects that we could collaborate on. And for now, we've landed on what I'll tentatively call an experimental media project. It's experimental in that we're not committing to any one medium or even a specific value proposition. Because why not? If you missed the first edition of Cold Pitch all about, well, cold pitching, you can find it in this audio feed or at coldpitch.substack.com. Today, Sean and I are talking about our favorite daily YouTube show, the backbone of our evening routine, the content we rely on to draw a thick line between the workday and rest time, and the two men who have created such a rich text to explore.
No, we're going to do this now.
Okay.
We're going to do this now. Let me just get myself focused and gathered.
Sean and I have a daily evening routine. We finish up work around 4:30 or 5, make our dinners, and then sit down on the couch to watch Good Mythical Morning.
Good Mythical Morning.
You ever come across a photo or a video and had to do a double take to figure out what you're actually looking at?
Every time I see an old picture of you without a beard.
If you had to describe Good Mythical Morning to someone who's never seen it before in 30 seconds or less, how would you do it?
Good Mythical Morning is a daily YouTube show of about 20 to 30 minutes per episode. It's two white men who have been friends since they were children, and they just entertain you every day.
Hosted by self-described internetainers Rhett McLaughlin and Link Neal, the show just celebrated 2,500 episodes.
So happy. It's hard to believe. 2,500 episodes? Mm-hmm. All right.
What's funny about it is they're just such to my mind, just sort of like a concentrated representation of online media, of online culture. It's sort of like their exploration and bumbling through all these things that are happening. Everything from weird food tasting to toy package opening to challenges that they give each other to just talking about their lives.
This is Cold Pitch, a project that explores media, curiosity, and identity. I'm Tara McMullen, a writer, podcaster, and critic.
I'm Sean McMullen, a podcast producer, coach, artist.
And we're the co-founders of Yellow House Media, an audio production agency. Good Mythical Morning is, as they say, a rich text. On the surface, the show is goofy, even juvenile, despite the fact that both hosts are middle-aged men. But once you scratch that silly surface, there's actually a lot to unpack.
They are very aware of what they're doing and what context in which they're doing it. And not just in YouTube context, but in a cultural, national culturally, and internationally culturally speaking context. They know, they are very thoughtful about what they are doing.
Rhett and Link aren't just content creators. Yeah, they approach media making as a craft.
Yeah, they really do.
And they approach the media business as a craft as well.
100%.
Mythical Entertainment is a multimedia, multi-channel entertainment company that employs about 100 people. There's a network of podcasts and a membership community. There are table games, collections of merch, and series of collectibles. Rhett and Link have appeared on The Tonight Show several times. They hosted a Food Network show last year. They've authored two books, and the brand is releasing a cookbook in 2024 written by Mythical Chef Josh.
And they talk about that process while they're doing it as well.
Yes.
They don't pretend like it's, you know, they're like, whatever, like, you know, the don't pay attention to the person behind the curtain. There is no curtain. They're like, hey, we're trying this thing. Isn't that weird? See how this goes. They're very open about their process.
They even make the business of internet media part of the experience of the media itself on purpose. They have a recurring segment where they pair two kind of similar fast casual restaurants and try the same dishes at each restaurant side by side and then rank them.
All right, it's time for Food Feuds, Five Guys versus Shake Shack.
Gentlemen, in each round, you're going to taste similar foods from Five Guys and Shake Shack. You'll individually give each item a rating.
One is the winner and one is the loser. And it's funny, and there's recurring bits even within the recurring segment. But the prize at the end is that the restaurant gets the opportunity to sponsor a future GMM episode.
Which, to my knowledge, no one has ever taken them up on.
No, it's never happened.
All right, Five Guys, all five of you, whichever one needs to hear this. Jim, Matt, Chad, Ben, and Tyler. Okay? Do you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear us? Just sponsor a freaking episode of Good Mythical Morning. How hard is it to do?
But there is a lot of self-conscious awareness of what they're doing and a willingness to make fun of themselves in that. Even though they run an incredibly successful multi-channel, multimedia,
multi-million-dollar,
there's more to this rich text than the business side of things. Rhett and Link model a version of mature male adult friendship that is hard to find in any form of media.
Turns out friendship is contagious. I can't even say friendship.
French shrimp.
French shrimp is contagious.
They celebrate each other's growth and talk about intimacy, fatherhood, and anxiety. They are both open about the role therapy plays in their lives. They model self-discovery, political curiosity, and care for others.
You know, you do so many episodes of this thing, and you can kind of lose perspective. You know, okay, we're going to sit down. What are we going to eat today? What are we going to do? What's in, you know, it becomes a routine for us to do it, just like it can become a routine for you to watch it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But we are a part of people's lives.
Friendship builds friendship.
Friendship builds friendship.
Friend shrimp breeds friend shrimp.
Friendship.
And
there's like a comfort viewing thing that happens.
But I will
this
say,
modeling is part of the genius of Good Mythical Morning. This form of modeling isn't just something to watch. It's something to participate in.
But I will say, this show may have brought you together, whether it's a friendship, a group of friends, a romance. If and when you break up, do not blame us. We brought you together, but if you break up, it's all on you.
And only
theorist Roland Barthes argued that anything could be read as a text. A text, he wrote, is a little like a musical score. It solicits from the reader a practical collaboration. Barthes drew a connection between the reader and a text and the casual musician and a piece of music. The musician both plays and listens to the music as they play it. The performance created and received is the same performance. A reader experiences a text in a similar way. They don't simply receive a stable and specific meaning through the experience of reading, but instead participate in creating the many meanings of the text through the act of reading. When Sean and I watch Good Mythical Morning, we participate in its many layers. The way we interact with games they dream up or the food they eat is woven into the fabric of the text. Barthes even describes reading a text as play. With one hand, Barthes gestures toward playfulness, but with the other hand, Barthes points to flexibility and give. The way, say, a middle-aged American married couple participates with Good Mythical Morning is different from the way a Japanese high schooler participates with it. GMM has enough play, enough flexibility to have meaning for people with wildly different backgrounds and life experiences.
So that kind of brings me to another question that I wanted to ask you about, which is whether or not you feel you have a parasocial relationship with Rhett and Link, or Rhett or Link.
So let's define terms.
Sure.
Parasocial.
The term parasocial relationship refers to the relationship between the performer and their audience. It's a necessarily one-sided relationship. The audience can develop the feeling that they know and care for the performer, but the performer cannot know or care for individual members of the audience. The term parasocial relationship was coined by Donald Horton and Richard Wohl in a 1956 paper for the journal Psychiatry. They used the term persona to identify the image and character of the performer that's transmitted to the audience. A persona isn't exactly the performer as they know themselves, nor is the persona a role they play. The persona shows up day after day and offers a continuing relationship. Horton and Wohl write, "The persona's appearance is a regular and dependable event to be counted on, planned for, and integrated into the routines of daily life." Fans perceive themselves as sharing in the persona's public life, and to some extent, even their private life away from the show.
Yeah, I do. I have a parasocial relationship with them. Do you feel that you do?
I would not answer that as definitively. Well, upon checking my notes, dear listener, it is clear that I should have answered that definitively. Of course we have parasocial relationships with Rhett and Link, as well as many members of the mythical crew.
You know where my mind goes? Is I have a relationship with the ampersand.
That's an ampersand. It's a symbol for the word and.
My parasocial relationship is with the ampersand.
I think Sean is onto something with this ampersand idea.
Interesting.
What actually is happening is what happens in the space between the two of them. Not just in terms of the relationship, but literally in the back and forth. That it's less of a relationship with Rhett and Link, and more of a relationship with Rhett and Link. I started to wonder whether Roland Barthes had ever interacted with the idea of parasociality. It doesn't seem that he did, but he did investigate the role of the reader or the audience in relation to a text. For Barthes, as I mentioned earlier, the audience of a text creates the many meanings of that text. They aren't separate from the work, but participate in it. The audience plays with the text. Now, that's a pretty apt description of how we watch GMM. They're playing a game, we try to play along. When we go to the grocery store, Sean will ask me to check out what the boys are eating to see if he needs to add something to his shopping list. Maybe they're doing a Reese's taste test, so he might want to pick up a few varieties of Reese's to play along.
Peanut butter boys, today you get to continue those spirited debates about the best proportion of peanut butter to chocolate while you gut check your very favorite Reese's. Mm. The Mythical Crew has acquired all of the available Reese's candy varieties, meaning no Reese's snack products and no seasonal products, for a whopping total of 30 Reese's varieties.
Whoa.
That you will try.
What?
Today.
Okay.
And after you try each one, you'll give it a score of 1 to 100.
Okay.
Based on your gut reaction.
1 to 100. Thank you.
And it's here that I wonder if the notion of parasocial interaction breaks down a bit. Parasociality is, by definition, one-sided. The audience receives the performance, even as that performance is designed to draw the audience in. But GMM viewers, the mythical beasts, have a multi-sided relationship with the performance on the screen. They play along. They're even encouraged to create along. It's not exactly a two-way or three-way relationship with Rhett and Link, but it no doubt has more sides than a single one. Now, maybe I'm trying to make a distinction without a difference here, but I think there's something to explore. There's a kind of digital media that fosters a separation between creator and audience. Think celebrity Instagram feeds managed by an agent or intern. And there's a kind of digital media that invites participation, if not with the creator themselves, then with the subject matter, other audience members, or the creative impulse. Good Mythical Morning certainly falls into that camp for me and Sean. Now, once a month, Rhett and Link release a highly edited, sort of more conceptual video on a different channel. These are typically about 30 minutes long, often cut into a sort of mockumentary style, and include original music and special effects. You can tell that they're making something that really scratches a creative itch for them. I enjoy these videos. They're funny, but with an unexpected flavor of sentimentality. These videos don't invite play so much as they ask to be consumed. There's a separation between me as an audience member and Rhett and Link as creators that doesn't exist in the experience of watching GMM. And that's fine. It's just different.
Okay, last question. We often make the remark when things get especially absurd and we're laughing our heads off and they're laughing their heads off that we are two grown-ass adults watching two grown-ass adults do zany stuff on the internet.
You gotta grow up.
I find that meaningful in a way that I can't quite articulate. And I'm curious if you have more thoughts on the sort of grown-ass adult nature of what is PG content and our relationship to it.
There are these moments where there are times, particularly Rhett, you know, where he's very aware of like, I'm opening, like, okay, so recently there was an episode where they were opening these figurine blind box things.
We're exploring the phenomenon of blind box toys.
Let's talk about that.
And there's like certain figurines that you're trying to collect the set, and some of them are more rare, and they're kind of participating in this larger phenomenon that's happening.
Good Mythical Morning.
If you don't know about blind box toys, well, you are not alone. I first heard about them about 10 minutes ago.
That's been happening for a long time, but they've recently been introduced to it. And there's like at the beginning of the episode, he's very, very aware of like how ridiculous what he is doing. It's just like, oh, you just asked two grown ass adults to interact in a basically an adolescent experience. And isn't that interesting? And you can see him be like, okay, here we go. But then there is this moment, and this will happen to him quite a bit. And it happens to both of them, but with him specifically. There'll be these moments where his sort of...
You go first since you have four.
He lets down his masculine, performative...
And got a first one!
No!
Whatever. He lets it down and he is... There will be these moments where he is vulnerably enjoying what he is doing outside of what, quote unquote, society expects us that we should be doing as grown-ass adults.
Link, can I draw your attention to the crotch of cheese?
It's anatomically correct.
It has a little peen.
And there are moments where you see him, them, do this, where they are, there's actually sort of a gleeful, silly, playful joy that they're doing.
What did I get, guys?
And that's what we're participating in by watching it. On, why are two grown-ass adults watching two grown-ass adults play with children's toys? This, no, dude. When they're doing these like full-on innocent twee things, looking like they do, having the professionalism and the success and the families and the things. And yet they are showing up in the world.
This one's special.
Hold on. Hold on. I got the 1 in 100.
You got the Robbie. You got the Robbie.
And I would say authentically enjoying themselves and being playful and showing some vulnerability. Back to what you had said earlier about modeling something as men. Like, they are actually modeling something that I am hard-pressed to find. Other men modeling this kind of behavior publicly.
Well, I mean, what's going to be in here? A gold nugget?
Yes, we are two grown-ass adults watching two grown-ass adults play with children's toys. And it's awesome.
Oh.
Because why the fuck not?
With the guitar.
Because this is
so rare.
How rare there's a part that? Of us that needs that too. That we don't give ourselves
and
that.
I did get the one with the drum.
Oh, I mean.
That's where my mind goes.
By way of review, I got the one I wanted. I got the other one I wanted. I got the one you wanted. And I got Robbie with a drum that you also wanted. I just wanted you to be happy.
I am so happy.
I mean.
Which is great. That made me kind of think about two things. One, as you said, it is an invitation into silliness and joy and a childlike view of life, right? There's all of that, which is very valuable and meaningful in itself. And then I think underneath of that, again, to the point of like the awareness of craft, my guess is that knowingly or not, they have honed a skill that is stepping in to that silliness, zaniness, absurdity, whatever, and that doesn't make it any less real. That they've learned how to activate that the way a writer learns how to put the butt in their chair and start writing, or the way an artist gets the paint out and starts painting, even if inspiration hasn't quite struck yet, that they've turned this process of becoming gleeful into a professional skill that I think is also something that we could really learn from. So there's the invitation piece, but then there's also this modeling of sometimes you just got to open the toy like a kid. And by the time you get the second toy open, you will be a kid again.
They are very different people than when they started doing this. And I appreciate that their growth and that they intentionally pursue growth. Because that is additionally like this through line of their entire show is personal development. Absolutely. And growth as men. And I don't know where else that's happening, honestly. So, you know, why do we watch this every day? Because we're two grown-ass adults watching two grown-ass adults play and work on themselves and be better people.
And we watch because we get to play along with them. As I said, Good Mythical Morning is a rich text. I think that's a good place to end it.
I agree.
You've been listening to Cold Pitch, a project of Yellow House Media that explores media, curiosity, and identity. Now, is Cold Pitch a newsletter? A podcast? A performance art project? Well, we don't quite know what this thing is yet, and that's kind of the point. What can we create if we drop the constraints of any one medium and give ourselves a much, much bigger toolkit? That's Cold Pitch. You can find us on Substack at coldpitch.substack.com or learn more about our audio production agency, Yellow House Media, at yellowhouse.media. You can also find my other media project, What Works, at whatworks.fyi, and you can find out more about Sean's coaching at seandmcmullen.com. Cold Pitch is a production of Yellow House Media. Today's piece was hosted by Sean McMullen and me, Tara McMullen. I also wrote and edited today's episode. Our team includes Lou Blazer, Emily Kilduff, and Marty Seafelt. We live and work on the stolen land of the Susquehannock and Conestoga peoples.
And the Yellow House is located on the unceded territory of the Kutun-Naha Nation and the tribes of the Salish and Kalispel.